Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in Internet land. This is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. But I guess the announcer just said that, didn't he? I don't need to be repeating that. But anyway, I'm not here. I'm here, obviously, but I'm not home. Because usually when I'm here, I'm at home, where most of us have been for the last 2 or 3 months. But my wife and I jumped in the car and came down to Virginia, and where we are visiting with our grandchildren for a couple of days. And we went from snow 4 weeks ago to 95 degrees today. So, but I'm not complaining. I'd rather warm than cold, and it's great to see our family. And, of course, what I do in publishing, I can do wherever I am, and the nice thing about blog radio is that I can do that from wherever I am as well. And today I'm joined in a few minutes by my friend and colleague and local pastor in Western Pennsylvania, Mel Massengale. He was on the show in April, and so I thought it would be good for us to hear from another pastor's perspective. Certainly I was thinking when I invited him that we would talk about the pandemic, which we will, and coming out of it, but now we have a whole other aspect of culture and current events with the shooting of and the death, or not the shooting, but the death of George Floyd. And I was thinking about some of the shootings that I was reading about, and rubber bullets and what have you with the protests. And you know, I'm here with my granddaughter's almost 4 and my grandson's 18 months. And as all of us are, I guess we're thinking, what's the future going to be like for them? Can we overcome this ongoing battle, centuries long battle with racism? And I was just going scrolling through some headlines and seeing a well-known college football player went off on a Twitter rant that was racist in nature, and you know, it's just hard to wrap your mind around all that is going on and some of the attitudes of people. Yet, you know, and many have harkened back to 50 years ago those of us who are old enough to remember the demonstrations in the Vietnam War but before that, the civil rights era. And I think things are a little different in that there is more openness for people who are offended, especially African Americans, to voice their disapproval. I remember how some of the demonstrations were met 50 years ago and how they are now. But to say that because it's not where it needs to be sounds like I'm trying to frame it. Well, you know, it's better, so we are making progress, and I don't want to come off like that at all. You know, I have gone through an inventory of my own behaviors and activities and attitudes, I am grateful for the relationships that I have and that I have built with my black friends, but I just have to ask, what more can I do, and what more does God want me to do? And at the same time, the politics is so involved, so intertwined in this that it's hard to differentiate, you know, where politics starts and justice begins, and maybe I shouldn't even be thinking like that. But at any rate, I think we're all going through evaluations, and I would expect more completely thought through conclusions down the road. So I'm not holding anybody to what did you say and what do you mean by this? Because we're all thinking, we're thinking out loud. We're using our friends as sounding boards to just mirror our thinking and hear what we're thinking and judge it against the standard of that is coming from the people who are closest to it, and those are certainly our African American citizens who have faced this for many, many years. So I'm reading, I'm listening. As I said yesterday, I'm not only wearing a face back, a mask, I'm wearing sackcloth and ashes. I want to stay humble before the Lord. Nothing that God would show me about who I am and what I think and how I represent myself would surprise me, and none of it is above or beyond his or other people who I know and love and respects the input and correction. So anyway, that's just some of my thoughts for today. And those were idle ramblings, and you can certainly read more about what I'm thinking at any time on Facebook. I try to share those things and then watch and see what people are saying and how they what feedback they give me. So we've moved on in the Psalms, as you've heard me say throughout the week, and we've gone on from Psalm 91, and so today I wanted to take a look at Psalm 98. And I always read from the NIV. Verse 1 says, "Sing to the Lord a new song." And I just want to stop right there. That's a phrase that that is throughout the Psalms. And I'm just saying, God, we need a new song. I need a new song. And I'm not talking about a creative ditty or jingle, and I'd be open to that. But a new message and a new tune, a new melody that is relevant in these days for people. But at any rate, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. The Lord has made his salvation known and revealed his righteousness to the nations. He has remembered his love and his faithfulness to Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Burst into jubilant song with music. Make music to the Lord with the harp and the sound of singing, with trumpets and the blast of the ram's horn. Shout for joy before the Lord, the King. Let the sea resound and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the mountains sing together for joy. Let them sing before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples with equity. Thank God. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples with equity, with a righteous standard. And he will do the perfect job because he can judge the thoughts and intentions of men's and women's hearts. At any rate, that's enough of that. Let me bring on my guest for today, Pastor Mel Melsengale from the Summit Church up in Indiana, PA. Pastor Mel, welcome back to Wake Up to Purpose.
Hey, it's great to be with you, John. I appreciate you allowing me to, you subjecting your listeners to me again. I appreciate that, but it's a privilege to be with you.
Well, thank you. It's a welcome break from having to listen to me. So, your last show was quite popular, and so I thought, and we had said the last time before I even saw any of those numbers that I wanted to have you back because I always value what you have to say,
and you
say it so well. You know, there's so much we can talk about. Let's jump into the latest current event, the George Floyd death. How did it impact you and the church? And just share any thoughts that you may have on the matter at this time.
Well, you know, I think I was probably like every other decent human who saw the video, and it was revolting and it was heartbreaking, and it made me sad and angry and everything, as I think all moral people should have felt, but I think those of us that are believers probably felt a deeper pang within us that that just this injustice, you know, it's just not right. It just feels wrong. And I've talked with some other leaders about this, but those of us who endeavor to lead churches that are diverse, and diversity isn't just ethnicity, that's the most visible, I think, but, you know, churches that are diverse as far as gender and as far as age, all those things, you know, it's a real challenge to lead churches like that. But those of us that are endeavoring to lead diverse churches and diverse staff and groups, I think it was especially difficult because I've got Black people on my staff that that they are deeply hurt by this in a way that I can't understand. I can be empathetic, but I don't truly understand it. And so just how do I pastor them through this and how do I help them? And, you know, what is my responsibility as a leader to speak out and what should I say and how should I say that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those things that we wrestle with as leaders. I think we were dealing with a lot of that kind of stuff, but, you know, and I think about, I deal with a lot of rural pastors, and a lot of rural pastors they're in a very homogeneous setting, you know, and it's much easier to pastor and lead groups that look like us and think like us and value like us. And so, you know, it's moments like this that I think maybe it wouldn't be so bad to go pastor, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I'm so grateful for the team we've got and the people that we have an opportunity to lead. So it's just, you know, all the challenges that I think lots of leaders are facing right now. I think I'm just kind of looking at that, you know, just trying to figure out the best way to navigate that and shepherd and steward our people through that.
Yeah. Have you come to any conclusions? Have you, you know, for me, I'm trying to be a good listener without, you know, just sitting back and saying nothing. At the same time, it's such a volatile environment that, you know, if you say something or don't say something or what you say, it's, but I just feel like, I can't not be present, but I have to be true to who I am and my values. And I've tried to share as much as I can publicly. Have you had any, you know, like posture that you've taken that when you are addressing this issue with people, especially with people who are close to you who don't look like us?
Yeah, you know, I've tried to, you know, you said you've been listening, and that's really what I've been trying to do is just say, hey, how are you feeling? You know, what is going on with you and your heart right now, and what can I do for you? Like, how can I help you? And, you know, what you said about it's so politicized. You know, the thing that's sad to me, and it's not a political statement, but the phrase Black Lives Matter should be pretty benign. But it is so politically charged that no matter how well intentioned I am, if I say Black Lives Matter, there will immediately be people who read into that I think other lives don't matter or Black lives are more important than or any of those kind of things. And so that's just the environment we're in that even pastors who love people are struggling with. What can I say? And so I think what we've kind of decided, and this isn't probably going to be terribly popular with some people, is I would rather be wrong and sit with my African-American brothers and sisters, and have people perceive me as wrong than wrong them by trying to stay neutral somehow. And, and I just feel like, you know, righteousness is never wrong. And if I look back at some point and go, you know what, I misstepped, I want to at least misstep pursuing righteousness, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't know what all the right steps are along the way, but this is where for us, you know, as a church, I'm just going to be myself and be honest and let our people know, hey, we love the African-American community and we will fight for them. And we might make some mistakes along the way, but our job is to extend as much grace as possible to each other. And if we would do that, then we wouldn't have gotten into this mess in the first place. But all this stuff is much easier said than done.
Sure. Yeah, and it's and there are a lot of wounded people, and so it's words can sound very hollow sometimes. In those situations, things can be said on either side that will either be misinterpreted or aren't misinterpreted. They're very direct and
right.
insensitive, and so it's you know, the one thing I had Sheldon Williams, a pastor and a former police officer, African American, on the show on Monday, and you know, at the end I said, Sheldon, you know, what can we give us some tips, some pointers. He made so many great points, but he basically talked, build relationship, have a depth of relationship with people who don't look like you, and have the difficult conversations with people who do look like you.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I feel like I've tried to do that in my adult life. But while being true to who I am a white person. I don't try to act black. Yet I don't try to side with, you know, my people, who in saying that, being white people, no, my people are kingdom people. My tribe, my brothers and sisters are those who call on the name of the Lord, regardless of what they look like. And so, but, you know, and I know you've been doing it too. You just go through an inventory of, or like a check of attitudes and behaviors while we're seeking the Lord for where do we go from here and what do we do?
Yeah.
And that may be do nothing. So it's not an easy task, as you said.
Right. Well, and, you know, and I keep coming back to Galatians 3, you know, there's neither Jew nor Greek, you know, there's neither slave nor free, there's neither male nor female. And so I love what Paul does, because he breaks down and he says, hey, here's all the ways we identify ourselves. We identify ourselves by our nationality, by our gender, by our social status, by whatever it might be. And he said, set all that stuff aside. There, none of that stuff matters, for if you are a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, then that is your primary identifying point. And and so it's so easy to fall into this, well, I'm this or I'm that, or I have to think a certain thing because I am white, or I have to vote a specific way because I'm white, or whatever it might be. And I think at the end of the day, I think we forget sometimes that our primary identification should be, I'm a son or daughter of God, first and foremost. You know, that should filter every other decision that I make in my life, and every other stance, and every other viewpoint. What happens sometimes is we go, hey, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, so, and I just think Paul was onto something. And you know, it goes back to this idea that this is stuff that we've been dealing with since the beginning of time, since there were humans on Earth. They've struggled with their identity, and they've struggled with their purpose, as you know, you know about. And so here we are. We're still struggling with these same things today that Paul was addressing, you know, 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, I early in my walk, 1975, I was with at a conference, and an African American pastor said, "Come on, you want to come with me? Some of the brothers are getting together tonight." Well, he thought it was the brothers, but it turned out to be the brothers. You know, it was all African Americans.
Right.
I was the only white person, so so I couldn't believe, because I was 25 years old, and I had not spent a lot of time with African Americans, and the way they talked, and some of the names that they used, it was just so eye opening. They were so real with one another. At any rate, one of the they were having a discussion. One of the pastors asked the group, "Do you believe in mixed marriage?" And then one of the other pastors spoke up immediately, said, "Absolutely not." He said, "I think it's heinous. He said, I think it's offensive to God." And everybody got real quiet. He just said, so for me, a believer should never marry an unbeliever. He said, so therefore, I am totally against mixed marriage. I mean, you know, what he was saying, we are a new creature. We are a new creation in Christ.
Yeah.
And we should not be unequally yoked. Other than that, there are no restrictions. And, you know, in the life of our son, we've prayed, you know, God, send the person you have for him. And he went to Kenya and he found the person. And we couldn't be happier. I mean, I didn't put any restrictions on God, because we wanted a godly woman who loved the Lord and would love him. And that's God answered our prayer. And we couldn't be happier. But I don't want to say that like I'm some crusader. Like we have a
you know,
somebody in our family who doesn't look like us. See
right.
how good people we are. Because
We
just don't want to come off like that. Anyway, listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Pastor Mel Massengale, pastor of the Summit Church, about an hour north of where I live in Indiana, Pennsylvania, the home of the famous actor Jimmy Stewart. And when you cross the streets in Indiana and the light changes and the walk sign comes on, it's the voice of Jimmy Stewart telling you to cross the street.
That's right.
Pastor Mel, let's get back to the pandemic. When we talked last time, we were just 3 weeks into it, and now we're a lot farther into it and on our way out of it. Where's the church at? Are you meeting? What are you still doing? What are you not doing? Give us an update in that area.
Yeah, when we spoke last, we were so early into it. We were just trying to figure it out, and so. We are actually having live services this weekend. They're not open to the public to prepare for public services. We've invited some of our core leaders. So we'll have about 300 people in our services this weekend that we've invited to come to make sure that we can do everything the way we need to. It's basically a soft open for us just to test us. So we're going to do that this weekend. But I'm so excited about being back with people in the room. I'm preaching live because we'd been pre-recording our service and posting them, and so there's just there's just a different dynamic when you're engaging live human beings in the room rather than preaching to a camera. So I'm excited about that, and any pastor who's not excited about it probably doesn't really like pastoring. They might like preaching, but they probably don't like pastoring if they're not excited about being in the room with their people. So there's a thousand things that we're trying to figure out, and in that way it's not too dissimilar than it was when we talked last, because now the problem is, hey, we're opening, and what are all the things we haven't thought of, and what are the things that we're going to experience that's brand new for us now? And so we're working through those kind of things and trying to figure that out. We're going to have a public launch will be on June 13th and 14th, so we're going to try to work out the kinks this weekend.
Are you going to go back to the same number of services you had before the lockdown?
We are, and we feel like even with the limited seating capacity, we have two on Saturday night and two on Sunday morning. We feel like because of the limited seating capacity, we know that fewer people are going to come back initially, and so that works pretty well for us that we can do the four services. And we feel like as people are getting more comfortable, some of the restrictions are going to become a little more lax, and it's going to be easier to facilitate larger groups in the room. So for the time being, we're just planning on the four services. And again, we're going to play it by ear and try to figure that out. But every church in the area, every church in Western Pennsylvania, for that matter, has a different strategy depending on their context and their approach. And so we're going to do kids ministry. We're following the guidelines that the daycare centers are being asked to use by the CDC, and so we're applying those same standards in our kids ministry. We're ready to get back to church. Our people are ready to get back to church, and so we're moving ahead. And it's not going to be normal, and we've been telling people it's not normal. There's going to be some things that are a little different, but we feel like for the season we're in, this is as close to normal as we can be. So it's good.
So what are some of the things, like, you sound like you're taking some seats down, spreading them out. I mean, what are just some of the practical steps that you're taking?
Yeah, for us, we've changed the way people will be coming in and out of the building. So, instead of coming in multiple entrances, we're going to be asking everybody to come through our main entrance. And then everybody will go out the other entrances. So there's one way in, and then people go out a couple of different doors. And that way we're preventing people from overlapping or, having traffic in multiple directions. We're just trying to limit human contact as much as possible. So we're doing some of that. Some of our ushers, some of our staff, some of our leadership will be actually hosting people. So we'll meet them in the parking lot when they get out of their cars. We'll meet them there, greet them, walk them into the building. If they need to take their kids to kids, we'll walk them there, and then we'll walk them to their seat because we're trying to limit congregating in the lobby and that kind of thing. So we've got some standards like that that we're setting, but at the same time, you know, I believe that if our people are mature and responsible, it's going to be okay. And so we're just asking people, hey, extend grace to the people around you. If maybe you are ready to go hug everybody, understand that there are some people that aren't ready to go hug everybody. So extend grace to them if they think differently than you. And, you know, Paul talks about, you know, we do have Christian liberty. There are freedoms we have, but we lay down our Christian liberties for the good of our brothers and sisters. And so that's one of the things we're talking about. Hey, just because you feel the liberty to do something doesn't mean someone else does, so be respectful of that. So we're letting people police themselves to some degree. We're not requiring masks in our building, and we've made that very clear. And so if people are uncomfortable with that, we're just telling them, hey, we're going to continue online services. So there are some things we're doing, but we're trying to keep it as normal as we can.
Yeah, and you'll sing as normal? I mean, there was some, you know, talk of limiting singing because of, you know, what it could launch into the air from somebody's breath. You're going to sing?
I'll be honest with you. I've had some people in our church that their breath might have been launching stuff into the air before. But but no, we one of the things we did is we spent some money on a filtration system for our HVAC. And so the air in our auditorium will be recycled and scrubbed and turned over. I believe it processes it about every 45 minutes. So it's clean air moving in and out of the building. We are having people spaced out every other row and, you know, 6 feet between people on the rows. So, I mean, we feel like our goal is to make this church the safest place someone could be besides their own home. And if we're going to be honest, it's probably safer and maybe cleaner than their own home after they've been in quarantine for 12 weeks. But so, yeah, we've taken some steps like that. We're getting the building sterilized. A commercial company is coming in regularly to sterilize our building, and that's, you know, that's $3,000 that we're paying for that. So, I mean, we're taking some big steps to say, hey, we want you to be safe and want you to feel like this place is clean, but this isn't a race. So if you're not ready to come back yet, don't come back yet. You know, there's no pressure. You don't get a prize if you're the first one through the door. So so we're just trying to, like I said, extend a lot of grace to people. And if they feel differently, then that's okay. We value that. That's not a problem.
And obviously you will live stream your services or have them available afterwards for people to watch?
Yes, sir. So we'll still live stream the services, so that way if people are staying home, they can still watch with us. And so we're encouraging people, you know, to do that. And if they're comfortable having a watch party, invite your, you know, some friends over, maybe people from your small group that you're comfortable with, but you're not comfortable coming to church yet, invite them over. And if, again, if we're going to be honest, the, you know, the church in Jerusalem was the original multi-site church, you know, and they had one church in many locations. And that's what we're promoting is just saying, hey, feel free, be a home church for a while if you need to be. So that's what we're trying to do is just give options, meet people where they are.
You mentioned earlier you were, you know, preaching in front of a camera and, you know, you were putting that out as a service. Refresh my memory of what else were you doing that perhaps was unique during the time that we were not permitted to get together, where the use of social media and technology were concerned?
You know, it sounds counterintuitive to say this, but one of the most cutting edge things we did was old school, and some of the most impactful things we did, or different than normal, was simply picking up the phone and calling people in our church. And I think a lot of churches were doing this, large and small, but you know, we just made a list of people that were members in our church, people who were, you know, they serve regularly. And so we had a list of about probably close to 800 people in our church or 800 families that we split up among our staff. And we just said, hey, your job is to pastor these people, you know, call and check on them. Even if you don't know them, call and just see how they're doing. And I'll be honest with you, the staff was a little reluctant at first because we did this with everybody, even our janitors. We asked all of them, hey, I know this isn't your job, but this is your job. We're taking care of people. And we got so much good feedback from that, that we were thinking about people, that we were caring for them, that's something we're going to continue to do. So we asked them to do that. Hey, touch base with every person on your list every once every 2 weeks, and we're gonna slack off that a little bit now that we're getting back to normal. But we're still gonna plan on doing that once a month. Just reach out. How are you doing? Is there anything we need to know? Is everything okay with your family? And just letting them know we love you, we care mm-hmm. about you. And so, you know, there's some things like that we did that we probably had gotten out of the habit of doing as our church got bigger. But like, you know, cards, it's amazing how powerful a handwritten postcard can be, you know? Mm-hmm. And so some of our staff was sending out stacks of postcards every week to people just to touch base with them. And so I feel mm-hmm. like those are some of the things that were most impactful that they aren't very, they're not very cutting edge, but at mm-hmm. the same time, it was terribly impactful for our church and for the families in our church as well. So those mm-hmm. are some of the things that we did over the course of the 12 weeks. You know, I was doing a morning Bible study every day at 8 a.m. on Facebook for, you know, people in our church. And we started having people log on from New York and Florida and Oklahoma and Texas and literally all over the country. And some of these people in different time zones were getting up mm-hmm. at, you know, 6 or 7 a.m. to join us on our mm-hmm. Bible study. And so those are things that I think, man, I don't know that I can sustain that long term, but, you know, we want to figure out a way to continue to engage them. So there's mm-hmm. some of those things that we weren't doing before that became really valuable during the season to keep people engaged and connected.
Yeah. Let's just go with that thought a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're familiar with some of my stuff and mm-hmm. excuse me, and, you know, my emphasis for churches to be doing more through technology than they were doing. And when you say you were touching, you know, people in New York and Texas mm-hmm. and other places were logging on, some of them getting up early. I was reading an article yesterday of a pastor in Tulsa who has 5,000 people on a weekend, but about 35,000 people who tune in, you know, all around the country. I mean, it's a phenomenon,
yeah.
But you know, his sermons all through the week and tens of thousands of views on YouTube and such. You know, it was one of the lessons of the pandemic, or is one of the things we take forward from this that we need to be more, even more basic, like you said, of touching people through phone or postcards, or just more creative and more proactive using our technology than we were in the past.
For us, I think it's and both. I think I've told our staff the more technology we use, the higher technology we are, the higher touch we have to be. And so mm-hmm. it's easy for us to rely simply on technology and technology can be great for transferring information,
right.
but technology is bad for translating relationship or touch or intimacy. And so that's where, for us, we want to be and both. And so I think, you know, I think you and I have talked about this, but I think one of the challenges is that a lot of churches are saying, hey, we get to get back to normal now. And normal for them is no technology, no online.
Right.
So what happens is they've started engaging people that they weren't engaging before that would never come in through the door of their church.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to abandon those people because it's uncomfortable, because now we can go back to normal. And
mm-hmm.
so I've had this conversation with several pastors. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you going to continue to engage those people? Because God has brought people to your flock. It looks different
right.
because they're just not in your building, but they've brought
mm-hmm.
people to your flock. Are you going to abandon them just because it's hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we would never think about telling somebody who walked in our doors, hey, you can't come anymore. But that's essentially what a lot of churches are going to do when it comes to, you know, the technology component of their
mm-hmm.
services, is just say, okay, we're done with you, or we're gonna give you our leftovers. But at the same time, it's easy for churches, and I think you're referring to Mike Todd probably in Tulsa,
right? Yeah.
And Mike is a dynamic communicator, and they do some good things to reach people online, but it is not the same as having a church in your community that you can connect with in person. And so I feel like, you know, I've heard pastors say, I'm afraid that why would anybody come back to church if they can just watch online? But for me, I still believe that there's something powerful about standing in a room with people and worshiping corporately and hearing the voices and raising our hands together. There's something powerful about standing in a room with somebody and allowing them to lay hands on you and pray for you. And so I feel like, man, if our experience, our legitimate experience in the room is as healthy as it should be, then online will never replace in-person services. So for me, I really do feel like it's and both. I feel like it's, hey, we give a great online experience. We want to engage people that can't be here in person. We want to help them experience God, know God no matter where they are. But we want that to be a bridge to get them to you know, be here in person with us and experience that intimacy. So, yeah, I really do think that was a long answer. I think it's and both.
No, I think it's great. Now, we talked in the last show of some of the creative things that you were doing in ministry, and and I wrote an article last week about, I think we were creative in some of our use of technology during the pandemic, but, you know, how can we be innovative now? And I talked about the synagogue, which, you know, as far as we know, developed out of the absence of the temple worship, and especially was emphasized in the Babylonian exile, where, you know, the Jews got together, the synagogue became the focal point. And of course, by the time Jesus came, because there is no command to do a synagogue in the Old Testament, by the time Jesus comes, the synagogue is an accepted way of worship. It's not an accepted way. It's an important part of Jewish life and worship. Talk about some of the other creative things that you're doing, and maybe we can wax philosophical for a while about the need, even the command for us to be innovative where ministry opportunities and presentation are concerned.
Well, you know, for one of our core values at Summit is creative evangelism, and I think my team tried to get me not to use the word evangelism just because it sounds like, you know, I'm going to go just share my faith door to door or whatever it might be. But our thought is to reach people no one else is reaching. We've got to do things no one else is doing. So let's not just do good acts, because if all we're doing is doing nice things for people, we're just making them more comfortable on the way to hell. And so at the end of the day, what we want to do is wrap the gospel up in generosity, in acts of service and kindness, you know, to introduce people. So we do lots of things like that in our community that they look like it's just serving a demographic, serving teachers, serving, you know, police officers, whatever it might be, but really it's wrapped, the gospel is wrapped up in that, and it's given us lots of opportunities. So there's lots of things we do like that, and we really want to invite our people into that as well, where it's not just something we're doing corporately as a church, but we're really inviting our people into that creative evangelism as well. One of the things our staff did that I was really happy with during this pandemic was we did a thing called Double Your Impact. And what we asked our church to do is we just said, hey, for every $10 you give toward Double the Impact, we're going to buy a $10 gift card from a local vendor, restaurant, you know, something like that, and we're going to give that gift card to somebody on the front lines, grocery store employee, a nurse, you know, somebody who's working through this and serving our community. And so I thought, yeah, that's a good thing. Like, we'll get a couple $1,000 maybe for that. And as of today, our accounting team just told me we've brought in over $12,000 for that.
Wow.
And so, you know, for us, we've literally given away 1,200 gift cards in our community to different people and said, hey, thank you so much. We love you. God loves you. You know, we're here for you. Thanks for serving our community. And we've gotten so much good feedback from that in our community, just, you know, from people that you wouldn't have thought of. So that's been really fun. And so just doing some of those kind of things has been great. As far as innovation with church, one of the things I'm really interested in that I think is going to be important down the road and maybe sooner rather than later is this idea of home churches. You know, I mentioned that that we're inviting people to just do a watch party in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a potential for house churches to really become a more powerful movement in church overall through this, because I think some people are going to be reluctant for a while to ever be with a big group,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to be perfectly happy getting together with two or three other families to watch a service or to do a Bible study or to let their kids play and just talk about God, so I think that could be something that, as I look down the road, that churches may be resistant to initially, but I think could be a real opportunity for a lot of churches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any word from the Lord during the pandemic that you're still praying over or that you're ready to preach? And I'd be interested, what your message is going to be this weekend, but
yeah.
what was your sense? What was God speaking to you about during this time?
Please forgive me if I shared this last time we talked on your show. But back in September, I felt like God had given me a word for 2020, and I shared it with our staff, and it resonated with our staff. And I just kind of said, okay, this is going to be our word or our phrase for 2020. And I shared it with our church then in October. And we announced that we were launching a new location in Blairsville. So we're starting a new location south of us about 20 minutes. And it's crazy. God's miraculously provided and done some incredible things even through this season. But so I announced to our church, hey, the word for the year, for next year, is going to be terra incognita, and it's just a Latin phrase. It basically means uncharted territory or unknown
mm-hmm.
land, and it was used in cartography on the edges of maps. So, and there was an unexplored area, they would just say terra incognita, and I told our church, I said, I feel like in 2020 God wants to take us off the edge of the map. He wants to take us to a place that we've never experienced before, that we don't know, that we're just gonna have to trust Him. And I just had this deep conviction that 2020 was going to be about trusting God in the unknown. So we started 2020 with a series called Wilderness, and we just talked about wilderness seasons that different people went through in Scripture and what that means for us. We talked about Jesus in the wilderness and temptation. We talked about the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness and, all these things and what that means for us. And then, before we know it, here we are. And we've got, the entire nation feels like they're in a wilderness season, and the
mm-hmm.
entire nation is unsure about what tomorrow holds. They literally feel like they've gone off the edge of the map. And so that's been such a great touchstone for us to continue to come back to and say, hey, guys, remember, God told us, I'm going to take you someplace you've never been before. I want to take you to a place where you have to trust me, that you've never experienced it. And that's what we've seen over and over is that this is uncharted. I can't ask my mentors, hey, how should I go through this? Because they've never been through it either. And so at the end of the day, I can ask for good advice from people. I can ask for feedback from people. But I have to pray and say, okay, God, we got to trust you through this. And so even with everything going on with all the just race relations and tension in society, I think it's even important for us to go, okay, God, I don't have the answers. I don't know what the next step is. We're traveling in uncharted territory, but I'm going to trust you through this anyway. And I think that's something that's been good for us as a church to continue to come back to that kind of as a touchstone, just to remind us, okay, hey, God's got us, but we've got to continue to trust him. So that's been something that I think has really resonated with our people. And we gave out little river stones that had Terra Incognita engraved in them. And we just passed them out at the beginning of the year. So I've gotten so many pictures from people in our church that have taken pictures of their stone and said, man, I'm so grateful. This is a great reminder for me, because I carry mine in my pocket every day with me just as a reminder. And I'll put my hand in my pocket and just feel it and rub the words on it and just remind myself, okay, I'm going to trust God through the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good for our people. We haven't changed up our sermon series at all through this up to this point. We did a series on rest, which seems counterintuitive because you wouldn't think you'd need to talk about rest during a pandemic when we were
mm-hmm.
We were all home, but it was probably the best series we could have done during the pandemic, because we weren't just talking about the absence of activity. We were talking about how does your soul rest? And
mm-hmm.
and so I think that was really helpful for people, because people might be They might be inactive, but they weren't really resting because the tension in their hearts, the worry, the fear, the anxiety, all those kind of things. So, when we come back, we're going to be doing a series called Welcome Home, and just talk about, values of a home. And we're going to be talking about our values as a church. And so we're going to be talking some about some of the things going on, in society with ethnicities and how we get along with each other and things we should know. So we're going to be addressing some of that stuff as well. But really, just the series is going to be called Welcome Home for our church. Hopefully it's going to be like a family reunion. Getting people back together. And I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of tears and most of those might be from me. I'm not sure, but I'm excited about that.
Yeah, you're a good pastor. I would be the one that I'd enjoy the preaching, but, I wouldn't shed any tears. I would shed tears if people came for different reasons. So we've been talking to Mel Massengale, the pastor of Summit Church up in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Any plans? Have you thought ahead for the university students coming back in the fall? And are you anticipating anything there? Have you heard anything? Just what's the latest on that?
So it looks like at IUP they're going to have students on campus, but they're going to have hybrid classes. So it looks like what they're going to do is have classes with half their students in the class and half the students watching online or virtually. That's what they're going to do for some of their larger classes. I think classes under 25 or some threshold, they're going to still continue to meet in person. So I think they're working to get all the students back on campus for the fall. And I know that there's some issues regarding athletics and funding and some of those kind of things as well that encourages them to make sure as many students are on campus as possible. It looks like for the fall, it's going to be a relatively normal. And so I'm excited for that. I think once school is back, because it looks like our local district, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to have online classes and in-person classes. But, so once school is back in session, I think some normalcy will return and people will begin to feel like life is returning to normal. And I think that'll just help the psyche locally. So, yeah, I'm excited about getting the college students back and bringing some more life to Indiana for sure.
Yeah. What's your typical week like for preparing to preach? What's your preparation process or philosophy that you use to get ready to proclaim the word?
So typically what we do is in September of every year, I will lay out all of the ideas I've had for sermon series. Some of them are very developed, some of them are very undeveloped, and I'll lay them all out. I've got a big marker board in my office, and then I'll invite all the staff to come in and sit, and we'll just go through all these series, and I'll say, hey, here's what I'm thinking about, and we'll start just praying about it, talking about it, throwing ideas in, and some of the ideas will go away, and we'll go, nope, that's no good, or it'll change entirely. But what we want to do is lay out our sermon series for the following year. So in September, we always lay out the next year. And so even right now, I've got a file on my iPad for 2021 sermons that I'm laying out. So what I do is all the sermons that I've got filed for 2020, when I'm reading the Bible, when I'm reading, whatever I might be reading, if I see a good illustration or if I find a verse that maybe wouldn't be good for the sermon I'm preaching this week, but it might be perfect for the sermon I'm preaching in 3 months, I'll go ahead and put that in that file. And so by the time I actually get to the week of, usually way ahead of time, I know what the big idea is supposed to be, and I know some of the key verses. So by the time I get to it, if I've got some illustrations plugged in, really I just need to go through and piece it together. I've got all the puzzle pieces there. I just need to assemble it. And so usually I do that on Tuesday of every week. I don't have any appointments at all. Monday's my meeting days, staff, all that kind of stuff, and I'll come in on Tuesday uninterrupted, just sit down. Usually in the morning I'll plug that in, put it all together, and then afternoons I'll work on long term. If I'm doing a leadership or coaching session, or I'll work on that stuff. Sermons down the line, I'll work on that Tuesday afternoons. Then usually I'll load my sermon up on Wednesday for my staff to be able to put into the different places we put it, and then I'll come in on Saturday for our Saturday service. I'll come in the afternoon and preach through it a few times, just make sure my timing is good and refresh my memory, and then that's it. And if I spend too much time on it, it's gonna be a 2-hour sermon because I'll go, oh, that's good, I need to say that, and I'll just keep plugging stuff in. So that's the system that works best for me. That's typically what I do, what I try to do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Any plans for a family getaway this summer?
Yeah, it looks like some friends of ours pastor in Charleston, and so it looks like we're going to go to Charleston. They called and said, hey, would you want to come stay at our house? And because we had originally planned, we were going to go to Belize this summer. My daughter's graduating, and she wanted to do something on a beach, and we could get cheap tickets. And was like, let's go to Belize. Mm-hmm. And then with everything happening, Central America is kind of a mess, so we just said, you know what, well, maybe we'll wait. And so our friends called and said, hey, why don't you come down? And I said, oh, that's great, we'd love to see you. And they said, oh, we're not going to be here, but you can use our house. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. So we're going to go stay at their house for a week or so and just relax and hang out in town. And so that's going to be nice, good little getaway for us. But that, at this point, that's about it. You know, we got the oldest is getting ready for college, and so, you know, we'll be making a trip to Texas in August for that. So we've got a few little things, but that's our family getaway, I think.
Yeah, where's she going to go?
Southwestern Assemblies of God University in lovely and historic Waxahachie, Texas.
Oh, Waxahachie. I've been there. Down south of Dallas, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
I have a friend who has a personnel company, and it's in Waxahachie, and so I went down and profiled all the staff and did some team building, and yeah, so I know it well, and was there more than once. All right, the big question, will there be baseball, and what are your thoughts about the various formats that you have seen put forward by both sides?
You know, the longer they talk about this, the less I care. Honestly, the more they talk about it and the more they're fighting over things that seem irrelevant to me, the less I care if I see baseball this year or not. And so, you know, who knows? And I'm sure you've seen some of it. Like some of the guys that have just said, you know, we're not prorating our contracts. I'm not playing for $1 million. And it's like, do you have any idea how much $1 million really is, my man? That is a lot of money to throw a baseball. And so I feel like some of those comments have alienated some people, me included. I will tell you, though, and you know this, I'm a basketball fan. I am anxiously anticipating the return of the NBA. So I'm looking forward to that because there's going to be lots of basketball on, you know, in a very short period of time. So I'll be watching basketball pretty regularly, I think, end of July, you know, if they get started when they're planning. So, yeah, I'm not sure about baseball, though. And we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. I mean, I saw them propose the 50-game season, and I feel like 50 games, you know, like that's nothing. Because I think Whitey Herzog said – you know, Whitey Herzog said you're guaranteed to win 60, you're guaranteed to lose 60. It's the other 40 that matter, and so it's like, man, 50 games, you don't even know what kind of team you have in 50 games.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. What do you think?
I think increasingly they'll do something because, but I think like you said, 50 games and then expanded playoffs. And having it done quickly, so they, you know, in case there's a second wave, they're not caught up in that. You know, I wrote the Pirates today to get my money back. They gave me back for April and May, and I wrote for June and July, and they said they haven't made their decision yet. But I've made mine, and it's just like you. I've just lost interest. I guess I'm looking forward a little more to the hockey. But I will be looking forward to the NBA. But all of it just seems a little detached from, you know, from where we are. And in some ways, the last thing we need is a diversion or a distraction. I think we need to stay focused, you know, spiritually and in society on the issues that are before us. And so anyway, we'll. I think there will be a season, and but I don't think it's going to be much of one. And I think it's going to have long-term repercussions, like you said, for fans and interest and entities like the Royals and the Pirates and the Marlins, who were teetering on the, you know, on irrelevance, I think this could push them all the way into total irrelevance and oblivion. So, and it'll be interesting to see too with the NFL. I just, how do you social distance? You know, and what if there is a second wave? And you've already sold out your stadiums. You can't. You can't vacate every other seat and the drinking and the, you know, the partying that goes on with it. It's just going to be every aspect of who we are as a culture has been challenged this year, economically, racially, leisure, sports, money spending, and. You know, it's when I saw the NCAA tournament, and I may have shared this with you too, that $400 million was going to be wagered just on the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
I cried out, God, forgive us. You know, that much money just on one tournament. And when you take into account how much money is spent on gambling, you know, across the nation day in and day out. But again, that's another radio show for another time. Pastor Mel, thank you for the work that you're doing. Thanks for being so available to so many people and so relevant. And give my love to your family and enjoy Charleston whenever you go. And I look forward to connecting face-to-face the first chance we have.
Well, thank you so much, and as always, it's a pleasure to be with you, and thanks so much for what you're doing for the kingdom, not just here locally, but around the globe. I really do appreciate you, love you, and you have my support.
Well, thank you, Mel. God bless. Take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Pastor Mel Massengale from the Summit Church in Indiana, Pennsylvania, really a fine young leader, very creative, very innovative. And go back and listen to his first show, and you'll hear, you know, some of the things they have done as a church, and I'm sure they're going to continue doing. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to a ministry couple, Philip and Lisa Wins, that we met last September. They're from Toronto, Canada, and we just fell in love with them, and we had them down to our house in November, and we were supposed to be up there beginning of May, but obviously it didn't work out. But I want to get an update on, you know, the pandemic up there, but also Lisa is an American, Phil is a Canadian. I want to talk about race and why Canada, why did so many, the Underground Railroad, a lot of slaves who escaped from the South went to Canada. And we just haven't, maybe I just haven't heard of tensions that are there, but I don't think so. I think there's a whole different atmosphere there. So we want to get their perspective on that. And so so that's about it for today. I won't keep you any longer. This is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. And until we're together again, I want you to be about the work of purpose in your life. And if there's anything I could do to help you in your quest, don't hesitate to let me know. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.